My personal calling is through storytelling to help people meet each other and to share things that really matter. Stories, the stories that have lasted, the old stories, contain inside them many things that tell us how best to treat the world, how best to treat each other, and what we need to survive in the future. The old stories all contain this wisdom in pictures that we reap what we sow, that kindness is better than cruelty. To help others in need, the basic things that make us human. The stories remind us of this. They remind us also of how to use our wits, how sometimes to be clever enough to get out of a tight spot, or how to overcome a bully or a tyrant. And that there are always invisible helpers behind the scenes in every one of our lives. Stories remind us of these things. And when a story is told, we can then sit and we can talk together about how the story has touched us, how the things in the story are also the same things that are happening in our lives every day, and how we're dealing with those things.
You were talking today about one tight spot we are having as a humankind now on Earth with the environmental situation. How do you feel like stories can help us to with this?
Well, I think the best thing for me to do would be to tell you a story. And then we can see. In Taiwan, there is a mountain. The mountain of Bangpingduo. And at the foot of that mountain, there's a village. And one day into the village, there came an old man pushing a cart. He had food to sell. And he called out, one for 10, two for 20, three for free, one for 10, two for 20, three for free. The people stopped. Was that really what he was saying? One for 10, two for 20, three for free. His food looked delicious. So someone stepped up and said, oh, I'll have three, please. And the man handed over three of the choicest pieces of food that he had prepared. Is that for free? Yes, said the old man, that's what I said. Well, the customer started to eat the food. It was delicious and so filling. And soon somebody else came along, and they also got the food for free. And somebody else, and somebody else. And it wasn't long before all the food was gone. The old man turned round his cart, wheeled it back to the mountains. The next day he was back with more food, one for 10, two for 20, three for free. Well, word had spread. And now there was a queue for his food. Soon it was gone. The old man turned his cart and went back to the mountain. Each day he came down from the mountain with more food, calling out the same, one for 10, two for 20, three for free. And soon word spread to neighboring villages. There were great queues down the street for his food. And then one day, a woman went up to the old man and said, "I'll have one, please." And everybody else laughed and said, "But you're so stupid. Have three and then you can get them for free." "No," she said, "one is plenty. And besides which, his food is so filling, I can't eat anymore. And who's going to look after the old man when all of the food that he gives away has gone?" The old man looked at the woman. "You are the one," he said, "that I've been waiting for. For this is not simple food that you have been eating." "No," he said, turning to the crowd standing around him, "I am the spirit of the mountain itself. And what you have been eating are the trees and the rocks and the streams and the wild grasses that grow on that mountainside. Come with me now," he said to the woman, "and I will teach you everything that I know." And the woman walked away with the old man back up into the mountains. And the crowd watched them go. And only then did they see that half of that mountain was gone. And if you go to Taiwan to this day, you can see that mountain of Banpingduo. And only half of it remains. So there's an environmental story. Probably something that you recognize quite well.
Yes.
That most of us recognize quite well. I go down to the supermarket and I see buy one, get one free.
Yeah.
You have that here in Finland? Probably just as much as I have it in England.
Yes.
It's so hard to say no. So hard to say, "I just need one. I don't need to fill up my fridge or my larder, you know, with all of this excess food." But the temptation to have more than we actually need is so big. And what we are doing, of course, is consuming, consuming, consuming the world. And there are so many people without food. There are so many people who are living on virtually nothing. And in order to feed us the way we're eating at the moment, we have to plunder the planet. We have to rob it of its riches. We have to dig into the minerals of the earth so that we can drive our cars and all this kind of thing. And when is it going to stop? And what will be the consequences? So if I was to tell a story like this, we would probably have a discussion afterwards about it. About what did that story say to you? What are the themes inside that story? I might also ask, what is it you think the old man had to teach the woman? What would he teach her back up in the mountains? If you were that woman, what would you like to learn from him? Things like that.
How could we get these stories and conversations to the governments of the world?
Well, the more people that tell these stories, and perhaps one day at a dinner party or something like this, or one day in a book, you know, some leader might read of these things and it might change them. It's a very slow process, but we have to find new stories that are going to inspire us now. It's interesting, the head of Unilever, recently was speaking on BBC radio and was saying that the old story has run out. We all know that we can't live according to the old stories that have governed our lives so far. The whole thing of pleasing the shareholders and the massive profits and bonuses and all this sort of stuff that's ruining the planet. But we don't have a new story yet. We don't have a new story that's strong enough, that's compelling enough to change our way of thinking, of being, that will make us actually say, I don't want to live like I have lived. I want this because I know that it's better, not only for me, but for my neighbor and for my community and for the planet as a whole. The new stories aren't there yet, but slowly, slowly, we've got to layer them in. Slowly, slowly, we've got to build them into the structure of society. And I think the time will come, maybe 50 years from now, when we'll look back and we'll go, my God, how could we have been acting the way we were acting? How extraordinarily sort of me, you know, take care of number one, how extraordinarily selfishly we were living our lives. A friend recently said, this has been the age of introspection, but we need now to make it the age of outrospection, of looking after others, taking care of others.
Somebody was telling me about his vision, but it's one important thing if we want to save the world or do something about the situation with our society, with the way people live together and with the way decisions are made and how the environment is. He said that it's important for all of us to sort of create our own vision about what kind of world they believe in that would be a good place for all of us and how we could sustain life in a good way on the earth. And this is a little bit the same thing, like,
yeah,
that we create the story.
Yes.
Of the, yes. And your workshop here was Stories for the Future.
So. Yes, that's what it's been about. And I've been saying in that workshop, you know, we must give birth to images. This is not my words, this is Rilke, the poet Rilke. We must give birth to images because in them the future is waiting to be born. So we must use our imagination to create the picture of the future that we want to walk into. Without the imagination, then we're lost. And part of the work of the storyteller is to foster the imagination, to nurture the imagination in people, in children, in adults, to actually encourage that kind of creativity. Because if I can't imagine something better, then I'm just going to be stuck with things as they are. If the stories don't change, nothing will.
How do you see yourself in a chain of storytellers? It's been a chain of stories and storytellers as long as there has been humankind, I guess.
Yes, I'm just another one in the line of centuries of storytellers. Storytellers often say that behind me is the one who told me the story, and behind them the one who told them the story, and so on, back and back and back. So when I tell a story, I know that I'm just the next one to pass it on. And that sense of the past is important. The sense of it's not my story, but it's just me. I'm just the mouthpiece for the story to be passed on, I think is important, that in a way the stories are much older and wiser than I am. And so that's the right, I think, kind of attitude that a storyteller needs to have. And when a storyteller tells a story, the best compliment that you can get, really, is someone comes up to you and says, that was an amazing story. Not you were great, but wow, what a story that was. I loved that story.
Mm.
You know?
He also started International School of Storytelling in England. Is it here in 1994?
Well, I started that school in 1994, the School of Storytelling in England. And there really wasn't anywhere around where I could study storytelling, so I thought to myself, I must start a school, which was crazy. And it actually started inside a tree in Wales. That was where I had the idea. I was telling stories in Wales in 1990, and I went out for a walk afterwards, and a storm came on, and I needed a place to shelter. And then I saw a tree, an oak tree, by the side of the road, and there was a hole in the side of the oak, and I thought, oh, it looks as though I can shelter in there. So I got down on my hands and knees, climbed inside the tree, and found that not only could I fit inside, but I could stand up. And it was so big in there that I could stretch out my arms and only just touch the sides. And sheltering inside that tree from the storm, the idea came to me, let's start a school of storytelling. A place where people can come, where they can study storytelling, learn the art of storytelling, and be able to use storytelling as entertainers, as teachers, as healers, as environmentalists in business, in their personal lives. And immediately I thought to myself, who am I to do this? I only know so much. I'd only been telling stories for about 6 years at that point. So I was always afraid, but then I thought to myself, don't be stupid. You know, you don't have to try and do it all by yourself. How ridiculous that you should know everything. Invite other storytellers, invite friends, and slowly build something. So that's what happened 20 years ago. The school is still there. People still come from all over the world. And recently we published a book called The Storyteller's Way, which is about the school and the skills and the craft of the storyteller, so that you can learn if you can't come to us from a book. It's much more fun, of course, if you come along and learn with other people.
So this story of how the idea came to you reminds me of the poem you recited this morning.
Which one?
About the door.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's true. This is a poem by Adrian Rich, and it's called Prospective Immigrants, Please Note. But for me, it could also be called Prospective Storytellers, Please Note. And in this poem, she speaks of standing before a door, and when I tell a story, it's like I go through a doorway. I enter into a different world, and I discover things there about myself. The story is always a mirror. So the poem goes like this. It goes, either you will go through this door or you will not go through. If you go through, there is always the risk of remembering your name. Things look at you doubly, and you must look back and let them happen. If you do not go through, it is possible to live worthily, to maintain your attitudes, to hold your position, to die bravely. But much will blind you, much will evade you. The door itself makes no promises. It is only a door. In a way, you could say the story itself makes no promises. It's only a story. But when I enter into a story, I find the story inside myself. That's the thing about remembering my name, or that things look at me doubly, like in that poem. Suddenly I get my reflection. I get a reflection of who I am, or who I might be, or what I have been, and I see more clearly. It's like the story is a pair of spectacles. So I see the world through the eyes of the story, and that changes my universe slightly. And if it's a good story, I will actually see clearer, or perhaps more compassionately, when I digest the story, when I really take it in and work with it, or allow it to work on me.
Yes, here at the Symposium of Storytellers, it's easy to sort of feel the quality people are meeting each other. And maybe that's really like a good proof of how the stories work on people.
I think so, yes. They're sharing stories around the theme of healing. So here at the symposium, there are many people who are concerned about the future, concerned about helping others, concerned about the planet as a whole, concerned about peace. So people's hearts are in the right places, and they're hungry for stories that they can put to work in different situations. So when a story is told here, I think it stirs the listeners or the hearts, it touches the hearts of people present, and then they speak about those things. And as they speak about those things, they get closer to one another. They find that, oh, you too care. You too are concerned about the things that I'm concerned about. Let's do some work together, you know, because if you're alone, you're not as strong as when you're working with other people.
Thank you, and thank you for the inspiration of creating beautiful stories.
Thank you too.